Welcome back to Don't Call It a Book Club. My name is Luke.
My name is Dan.
Today we are continuing into Ninth House. We are up to chapter 20, so about two-thirds of the way done today. You had a little warm-up for me, Dan?
Yeah, I got a little warm-up for you, Luke. Luke, today, this is another This Happened to Dan Today warm-up. Today, driving in traffic. Standstill traffic on the interstate. Nothing for like miles around. Just stuck because there was a collision. Hopefully everyone was okay. I have no idea how it turned out. Stuck for 20 minutes or so.
Okay.
And two small children in the car next to me roll down their window and are desperately trying to get anybody to play a game of, I can't remember what it was called. It was called like Bean Bazoo or something.
Okay.
It's like a little card game thing. And they're just like yelling at anybody who drives slowly past their car if they want to play. And this got me thinking, Luke. Mm-hmm. There is a tier list of interactions that you will do with other people in other cars.
Okay, sure.
And I'm curious where you fall within this tier list of interactions you will have with other people. Because on the one end, there is somebody nods to you from the other car and you sort of nod back like a recognition nod.
Are you specifically talking about in a traffic jam or just in general?
In general. Okay. Although I am interested to see how these dynamics change in a traffic jam, because I think a traffic jam provides some opportunities for other stuff. For example, in a traffic jam, people like getting out of their cars and having like drinks with the people around them in the other cars. Obviously not the driver, but just like doing a little impromptu snack sesh.
Okay. Okay.
Which I'm never doing, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, like, to
first question, Luke, are you playing this game with these children?
I am on the side of like, I don't have a strong desire to interact with other drivers.
Yeah.
Now the fact that they are children, I think, does change it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily, it doesn't necessarily change my feelings about it because I still don't want to do it.
Yeah.
But I am probably more willing to play around with kids because like it would make them happy. Right. I don't think
you remember
going
being a kid and getting the trucker to like toot the horn.
Right. Which was awesome.
Past, which was always fucking amazing.
I don't know if I'm playing like a card game though.
Yeah.
That sounds like it's going to be a real mess.
It felt like it was a little bit too much that they were asking from me, especially considering I don't know the card game. What if this is like a 45-minute thing? I don't know if I want to commit to that.
Right. I think the kids need to ask for less from me, I think.
I think a rock, paper, scissors, I could totally two out
of three. Absolutely. Listen, yeah. I'll play rock, paper, scissors all day.
Yeah. Hit me with a rock, paper, scissors. That would work. Can I tell you the deep memory that this is bringing up of what I used to do to other drivers when I was a young person?
Please, yeah.
At stoplights or stop signs, I would, if I was in the passenger seat, turn and stare at the person in the car next to me.
Just to freak them out?
Do not, just stare, not say anything, not roll my window down or anything. Just like not stop looking at them. Because I thought it was fun.
I love it. I love it. It does sound fun.
No.
Just a cool thing to do.
I was being a terrorist is what I was doing. I was being a street terrorist. And I didn't realize it at the time.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, to answer your question, I do think there's a difference in how I approach this in a like complete traffic jam than just regular driving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, regular driving, it's like absolutely not. I'm not interacting with anyone because like to me, most people that want to interact when they're driving are like usually doing it in a negative way.
True.
Like most true. Driving experiences are like the two so people true. Are mad at each other. And I do not, I like will not have anything to do with anyone that is trying to get my attention during a regular driving scenario. Cause they're going to kill me. Yeah, they're probably going to kill me.
Odds are good. They're going to try and kill you. Yeah.
Now in a traffic jam, when everyone's trying to like make the, maybe have a good time, make the best of a bad situation, I guess I'll be more open to it for sure. Honestly, if I'm like sure that it's completely stopped and my neighbor gets out with like a snack, maybe, I don't know.
Whoa, Luke, I love this for us. What if they get out and they've got a little mini grill in the back of their pickup and it turns into just like a little grill off, a little tailgate situation?
Absolutely, 100%. Now, because like, I will say, how could I say no to that? Even if I don't want to do it, even if I'm like, I don't really want to like get out and grill with a stranger, how could you say no?
Yeah. Yeah. This is turning into like a Bud Light commercial now that I think about it.
Yeah. Actually, the Coors Light train is going to come by and it's going to cool us all down in a second.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe, I don't know. I will say I have not been in a situation where it's been like genuinely completely stopped in a while.
This is a really interesting circumstance because I feel like it has revealed a little bit of the magic of a traffic jam where like literally stopped. I turned my car off because it was like, I'm just idling. I'm not moving at all for like 20 minutes. And it's sort of this situation where you're just like looking at the people around you and you're like, we're all just kind of like stuck here and definitely not moving for a while.
Right.
You guys, are we hanging out now? Because like, I can't go anywhere. Like, we're all stuck here and this is boring as shit.
Right. Let's get a little hang sesh.
Feels like a good opportunity, honestly.
But under no circumstance should you give me your information for us to hang out later.
No. Absolutely not.
A complete one-time thing. But it'll be a story. There we go.
Could be cool. Anyway,
I like it. Interesting question there. Let me add, sometimes like we've been doing this for a while, so sometimes our warm-ups are hard to come by. I feel like I'm on a dry spell. Listeners, if you have something that you want to just like hear our thoughts on, or you have an idea for a warm-up, shoot it our way on the Discord. We do still check that. So
Hit us on the Discord. We also have a Patreon. I'm trying to remember how you get access to the Discord. I think if you get on the Patreon and send us a message, maybe. Or somebody who's already on the Discord can invite you. maybe check the subreddit. Our socials are a little bit lacking right now. Sorry about that. Also, we're not doing the Twitter or whatever that thing has turned into anymore. So that's just like not a thing we're on.
That is no. Should we do Blue Sky? Well, let's talk about it later. Okay. Let's talk book now. Like I said, Ninth House up to chapter 20.
Mm-hmm.
I did have a note on like literally the very first page of this section.
Oh, amazing.
So we had talked last episode about the author intentionally put in this interaction with, I keep forgetting her name, but the professor who's like her academic advisor kind of thing.
Like Bulbum or something?
Yeah, where she has this kind of out of touch moment where she pretends to be like in the same socioeconomic class.
Yeah.
There's on the first page of this section, Alex drops off Dawes, I think is her name.
Uh-huh.
And calls, and I think, I don't know who calls it this, but they call it the like grad school ghetto. And I just want to say, do not say that you live in the ghetto if you don't.
Especially not the Yale grad school ghetto.
Like I will, listen, both Dan and I have done grad school. You don't make a ton of money. And you do have to like share rooms with people or even like maybe rent a place in like not the best neighborhood. You don't live in the ghetto, okay?
No, absolutely.
You absolutely do not. It's not the same thing.
You can't call it that, guys.
Please don't. I will immediately assume that you like don't know what that word means. It should not be in grad school.
Luke, they're there to learn. Okay, so maybe they should be.
Okay, maybe should. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that got me kind of riled up right at the beginning. But
yeah. So this section, the big thing that happens in this section to me feels like the manuscript party and like this revelation about manuscript and sort of what their deal is.
Okay. I think there's multiple big things in this section, but
fair,
but sure.
But one of the big things is the manuscript deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of all of these, manuscript seems the most powerful, right?
Okay, so, like, I feel like the magic is completely unbalanced in this book.
Okay, good. We need to get into this, because I feel like this was a thing that was bothering me the whole section. And when we learned what manuscript did, I was like, oh, this is the one you want to be in.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, even just even setting aside just the party, like, I don't know if we'll get to it, but it comes a little bit later. When she comes to ask them for like a favor kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the guy that she talks to is like, oh, grab this salt that I have like on the mantle right here. Like here, just take a little bit of it. This lets you convince someone to do anything.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, this is the most powerful thing I've seen so far.
Especially because, okay, when he first explained it, I was like, oh, this could be kind of helpful, but I wonder what the limitations of this are. And then you see what the limitations of it are, and they're like, fucking nothing. Like,
there's
no limitations to it.
There's absolutely none. The only limit is time. It's a time limit. Everything else, it's like, oh, yeah, you can do anything.
They'll do anything you tell them to do. It's crazy. Yeah, manuscript is the real. Also, let's talk about where they source their magic from. Sorry. The first magic society we learned about, Bones and Skull or whatever, they have to do this intricate process to dig into somebody's entrails to get their magic. Okay?
Right.
Manuscript throws a fucking batshit crazy party, throws a rager, and they power their shit for the whole year?
Right. That's cheating.
What? That's it. That's the magic one. That's the powerful one, guys.
I'm trying to figure out how the others recruit. You know what I mean? Like, how... I guess it's just like manuscript has a limited number, and so...
Yeah, you think they have a quota system where they're like, manuscript, now each society can only get 5 freshmen a year. Right. That's all you get.
Because, like, who sees manuscript and is like, okay, I could probably meet superstars, do cool parties, clearly have the most powerful magic, or I could help out with small contracts.
I could go into patent law. This is a tough one.
Give me manuscript. It's so much better. It's clearly so much better.
It feels unfair how much more powerful it is.
Right. I also feel like they seem to like stick to their own themes more so than is quite necessary. Like we hear about how they, manuscript specifically, has like sources for these drugs. And so like whenever you need one of these drug type things, like manuscript has it.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know why the others can't do that. Like, are there other things that the others like, oh yeah, cause like one of them is just, it grows in a specific spot. Right.
Yeah.
And so I have to think that some of the other ones are like, oh yeah, we found this other drug that grows in this other specific spot and it does this thing. Is it like, oh, now we have to hand it over to manuscript because it fits their vibe more?
Oh, I see. Oh, interesting. You're saying that they have to maintain theme. So if like the Aurelian finds a cool flower that allows you to talk to the dead, they have to be like, fuck, we have to give this to Book and Snake.
Right.
Or whatever. Well, but okay. Maybe. However, Wolf's Head has like the death magic, right?
I kind of, yes, I think so.
Wolf's Head is the one that they went to do the, like, put your head in the pool ritual, right?
Yes, but Wolf's Head also does the shape-shifting thing, although they did hate calling it that.
Yes, exactly. But that feels like those are sort of... It feels like when you're talking to the dead in the river, you're chomping on book and snakes.
Fine. Yeah, I agree.
And so maybe what it is they have an outward theme, right, as a recruitment tool. Uh-huh. But then once you get in, they're just like, yeah, we do all kinds of magic, but we have to just, like, it's easier to sell it if we have one focus, okay. Right?
Yeah.
And maybe they are better at that, right? And the members are more interested in that type of magic.
Mm-hmm.
But they have, like, weirdos who only can transform into, like, a chicken or something, and they're like, okay, well, Daryl's going to work on the, like, ritual death magic stuff.
Right. You think maybe, because to lean into the college theme a little bit, you think it's maybe like a major minor situation?
Yeah, it's absolutely a major minor situation. Yeah.
Okay. I can get on board with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't. I also feel like can we stay on manuscript for a little bit longer?
Let's go. Yeah.
So one other note that I have is, she goes to them later, as we've discussed, to get their help to, like, reverse this potential video, which very dark, by the way, very dark scene here.
Pretty tough.
And so we learn that Manuscript has the ability to do these rituals that will, like, make things go viral.
Mm-hmm.
And one example is, like, a very mediocre song that goes more viral than it should. And, like, I kind of, this feels very mundane. Like, this happens all the time. This is just, like, social media algorithms or, like, people that pay radio stations to play songs more often. Mm-hmm. This doesn't feel magical to me.
Well, it feels sort of like the stock market one, too, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Luke, I was thinking about this more, and we're going to get into book report mode a little bit because... Okay. I feel like the real message of this is critique of these societies. And the point is more that these societies produce networks of people that allow their members to do things like they had magic powers. So like the stock market one, in the real world, people who know financial people just are able to play the stock market better than the average person because of the connections they have.
Are you talking with people insider in trading? That world?
I'm not saying that necessarily. But if you get a hot tip or something.
Right, because the thing you were describing is illegal.
Correct.
But I mean, to be fair, the example that we're seeing of them cutting open a homeless man and scooping out his entrails is also illegal. So the analogy sticks.
I also think it's not even that far that it has to be insider trading. I think maybe if you just go to Congress and then you could pass legislation that directly affects the stock market, you just have to tell your family what you're doing.
Right, but that is insider trading. It's just not enforced.
It's not illegal.
Is it not? I thought. Okay.
Anyway. You're right. It's technically illegal, but it's impossible to detect, really. Anyway, point is that you don't even need to do insider trading, though, because you also can just get investor money to do stuff much more easily than like you or I can. So like those networks have access to like millions of dollars, potentially billions of dollars of initial capital investment for any kind of project they want to start up. So it's way easier to get things going. It's the same thing here with Manuscript, right? Getting things to go viral, like you're saying, isn't a superpower. People do it all the time using like networks that they've established. And so I feel like this is sort of what Lee Bardugo is pointing out, is that like in this world it's magic, but in the real world where this stuff actually happens, these societies still do this sort of stuff.
Right. Yeah. You're right. I'm not thinking of it allegorically enough, probably.
That's how it seems to me, at least. That's how I'm reading it.
Okay.
Because
I like
you're
it,
right.
Actually. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Can we move from manuscript, though?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Okay, so we get a little bit of a insight into what's happened to Darlington when they go deal with this electrical short.
Yeah.
Or whatever. This, like, buildup of charge. He's telling the story about the fact that St. Elmo got kicked off of campus. Now they can't do their magic anymore, and the magic is all bottled up in this one spot.
Mm-hmm.
And the magic that they could do was, like, weather control.
Yeah.
Just, like, let somebody else do that. Guys, what are we doing? This is a skill you can learn. Like, if I'm Yale and I kick them out of this spot and I know it's magic, I'm like, okay, we're going to put the student life office in that room. And then those people are going to learn how to control the weather. So our spring party is always amazing.
Right. It does feel because, like, they kicked this group off campus and now that group, like, can't really do anything. They still exist, yeah. Though, right? They're just, like, impoverished and without power.
Yeah. They can't even summon a small breeze.
Right. And this is a place where power wells up, and so they occasionally will catch other societies trying to do a ritual here. And they're like, yes. Out of here. But they also have to come in and do maintenance because no one is doing anything with the magic. So yeah, it's just like we've gone like lose, lose, lose.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Just like charge them way more rent or something. Like,
yeah. Something. I mean, it's easy. It's easy to come up with better solutions than this.
Right. You'd think Yale could figure this out.
Do you think
you have a resource?
Actually, here's
here.
My question. Do you think that the magic in each of these spots is for specific uses? I feel like no. Like,
yes.
I feel like you could do anything because he talks about how other societies keep trying to do rituals here.
Hmm. Well, I feel like it is intentional for specific purposes.
Like
because
it's a better
of the
fit.
Yeah, because of the theming of the different societies and the fact that when there's no society there, right, it's like electricity that builds up.
Right, okay.
So it seems like they are specific in their themes. And as we were just talking about earlier, these other societies probably all have weather magic to some degree too.
Right.
So maybe they are siphoning some of that weather magic, that good, good weather magic.
Mm-hmm.
Just they're not as good at it.
Yeah, I agree. Unless they're just like, God, we cannot figure out the weather thing. Let's just go in and do the disruption thing every so often, because if we do the alternative, maybe they just suck at it so bad that, like, when they try to actually do something, it just ruins things.
Maybe there's we never thought about, like, the ops in this situation.
Mm.
The Council of Weathermen.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I mean, the Council of Weathermen is like, fuck you. You're not doing your weather magic. We finally are able to predict the weather.
Noah is like, all right, you guys. It's too much.
They're like, we figured out our models. We can get at least a week in the future pretty good. Okay? Stay out of there.
I could see that, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have some... Can we actually stay on Darlington in general?
Yeah, I like that. Let's go.
Because I have quite a few notes on him. Because we see this scene where he gets, like, sucked into a trap. I don't quite know what's going on. Doesn't seem to be Alex's fault in any way.
Wait. Oh, absolutely. No. Although I think she feels guilty because she didn't do anything to stop it.
Right.
Maybe, but I don't know. It's hard to tell.
But setting that aside, we get a chapter about more of Darlington's background.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear about his, like, background with his grandfather and his parents. And I'm curious if you read this the same as I did, because I started off reading it, like, kind of as intended. And then towards the end, my opinion was starting to waver a little bit. And then I, like, reread it again.
Yeah.
And to me, it seems like the grandfather is the bad guy.
This is a question I have. Is the grandfather cool, or is the grandfather very not cool?
It seems like the grandfather is very not cool to me, especially after I reread it again.
Okay.
Because like at the, okay, so it starts off being like the grandfather, like they come from money, right? From, yeah. They have this estate that is like not really producing anything anymore, but they kind of like live off the remaining money of it. And the grandfather like pretends to be a normal guy, but then at the end, it's like, hell, he had just been living off of the estate and like doling out the money as he saw fit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one of the examples where you get to the end and you're like, wait, this guy fucking sucks. Okay. Because like he's roasting his son and daughter-in-law, calling them layabouts who can't get a job. First of all, Darlington's mom, his daughter-in-law, is a professor.
Yeah, correct.
And it's a little bit unclear to me if his dad is actually unsuccessful or if he's like just fine.
Right. Like if the grandfather is just like criticizing them unnecessarily.
Yeah. I wish I had written down my notes a little bit more carefully than this, but like everything, when you read it back through, it's like, oh, I don't know if I really believe the things that his grandfather was saying about his parents.
Yeah.
And also like on a second read through it feels a little bit more sinister.
Yeah.
Where like, it seems to me like he was withholding stuff from them to make including Darlington, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't like it.
I think it's also telling that in the end, Darlington feels a sense of obligation to the house that he lived in with his grandfather for like why? This is a kid in high school. Like,
right.
Something is fucked that this kid is like, no, I need to keep this house in its decrepit, like, not decrepit state, but just like this old decrepit house in our family for no reason. Like, right. Just because it reminds me of my grandfather and he was important to him. Like, I think you kind of, also how his grandfather like seems to be wanting to create like the perfect child.
Yes, this is the other
because
thing.
he's embarking on this quest to make somebody who he describes as like not a pussy because he thinks his actual son is too much of a pussy.
Right.
But like, what does that mean? What are you talking about, Grant?
Well, also the only thing that we have here is that Darlington goes to public school.
Mm-hmm.
But he also like has private tutors coming through and everything. And he's the one that you're referencing is that his dad is like, oh, he can come to New York. He can go to this school. And he's like private schools make pussies.
Yeah.
Referencing his dad. Like I think there's a lot of value in going to public schools. But the value of that is like broadening your horizons of like people you interact with and like making friends and like and becoming more worldly, I guess. And like it doesn't seem like that's what was obtained here, because like in this whole thing there's never, maybe like once, but like the thing that is missing in here is friends.
Yeah, correct. Oh, so true. So true, Luke.
And it's like, okay, grandfather, like you clearly feel like your son failed you. And so now you want to try again with Darlington, but the only thing you're changing is like going to public school without any,
and teaching
like
teaching him like fencing.
Yeah. Ah, terrible. Terrible stuff.
It feels like a rich person trying to cosplay what it means to be like working class.
Right. Which actually his mom says this. His mom says, calls it his man of the people act.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly. Especially considering that Darlington is too young at this point to really have the like perspective of an adult to look at the situation.
Right.
Because his grandfather has raised him. And from that perspective, it seems like his parents don't want him. And that might be true as well. Like, both might be true because his parents don't seem to be, like, fighting that hard.
I do think that they're not fighting that hard, but I will also say they're not, like, pushing him away.
That's true.
They are coming down frequently and being like, you should come to New York.
This now, is true.
They are, like, to be fair, they, like, they did, like, leave him with the grant. But again, I kind of feel like I'm trying to read between lines here that, like, the grandfather has, like, forced them in some way to make him live with them.
It seems like the grandfather has a lot of control here. Yeah.
It's bad. It's bad, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. Especially considering the state that Darlington is left in when the grandfather dies. You got to prepare your kid. You shouldn't be preparing your kid for a life of suffering because you think it's cool. Okay?
Right. they also, like, do this town thing a lot of the time. And it's kind of the same, like, Man of the People act where it's like, I don't think that you're actually, like, a representative sample of this town.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I don't know that much about New Haven.
Yeah, me neither.
But I don't know. Mm. Okay, I have one more. I have another note about Darlington, actually.
Yeah.
I feel like this is intentional on the author's part. But everything about Darlington is a caricature, I feel.
Okay, say more. Because I think I agree with you. But
of,
yeah,
like, of, like, a, like, well-off, like, son of a rich family in the Northeast, like, and you know, like, of the, like, elite universities and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, like, a lot of this is just, like, stuff that we've already talked about. He lives in this big house and that kind of thing. he's, like, smart and has all these, he's, like, good at all of these things because he's had, like, private lessons and stuff like that. But the thing that, like, finally drove this home to me is a very small thing is when she's talking about clothes.
Yeah, I have this note too.
We talked about it last episode when he's wearing a barber jacket, but also this episode, she compares, like, contrasts Darlington and I forget the detective's name.
Detective Turner. Yeah.
And she says Detective Turner knew how to, like, dress. And one thing that's kind of funny about this is, like, he's just wearing a suit. Like,
yeah,
seems like a generic suit. But then she says Darlington looks like he, like, never has to try, kind of, but always looks good. And it's like, this is, I know literally exactly what he's wearing down to, like, the brands almost, because, like, this is the Ivy look. He's wearing the Ivy style. He's got, listen, he's got a blue Oxford button down under a Shetland sweater and some, like, mid blue jeans and some Alden suede loafers. That's what he's wearing every day. Because you've caricaturized this boy.
I love it. I love it. I mean, you're very right, Luke. You're completely right. This is Bruce Wayne, honestly, is what you're creating. Like, you've created sort of a Bruce Wayne sort of character with this. I think it's really interesting to contrast him with Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think they have a superficial connection in their sort of hard knock upbringing.
Okay.
Of, like, his grandfather died, he's left alone, right? There's this aloneness component to it.
Yeah.
And I feel like there is a potential for Darlington to see this as, like, a connection between the two of them, but it's, like, not close at all, the, like, level of realness that they're each experiencing. Like,
right, of course, yeah.
Alex is sort of raised by sort of a countercultural person who goes against the rest of the family and then goes out on her own, meets another, like, sort of outcast, somebody who's trying to do stuff different. Terrible, by the way. Also terrible.
Because we get Alex's background too, and truly horrific.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And I feel like comparing these two, it makes you really not care about Batman's backstory, is what I'm realizing. Because when you show Batman's backstory contrasted to like a real fucked up backstory of somebody who's poor and gets put in like a situation where they're on their own, it's just not even close. It's just,
right.
I don't care about Darlington's tough time with his grandpa anymore.
Right. I don't feel bad for Darlington like at all.
No, not at all. Because even in like the worst sort of situation that a kid with this much money is in, it's like the worst that was going to happen is he was going to go to UConn or something.
Right.
And so I feel like the parallel between the two is really the contrast and parallels between these two backstories is really interesting. And honestly, demonstrating how I think Alex is way more suited for this role than literally anybody else on the campus.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like they're valuing skills that sort of maintain status quo in some ways. And Alex has had to deal with some like real shit and been like effective in ways where she has very little resources. Right. And I just feel like Alex is way more qualified for this job. I feel like she is the right person for them to pick because of her background.
Well, okay. Let's distinguish here because I agree with you in terms of like her actually making a difference and like making this stuff better.
Yeah.
The problem is I don't think that's the goal of Lethe and the goal of the societies.
I agree with you too. But I feel like that's part of the story, right? Yes. I feel like part of the story is Alex actually realizing the true mission of this and not just the signaling mission to maintain the status quo with everybody else on campus.
Right. And actually this brings me very smoothly to another note that I have about Alex's interaction with what is he called?
The bridegroom?
No, not the bridegroom.
Dean Sandow?
Sandow, yes. So she is attacked by this thing, wraith, whatever, and is like getting healed up, and Sandow comes in, and she doesn't want to tell him what happens.
Yeah.
And as this happened, I was writing down those, I was like, I don't really understand. It seems like you should obviously tell him. But then as the interaction goes on, it seems clear that he's just like never going to do anything.
Yes.
To the point where like he literally doesn't do anything. Like she is in mortal danger.
Yes.
From now on.
Yeah.
And he's just like, all right, good talk. Let's go.
He's like, I'm going to talk to the board. Keep at it, kid.
Right. And this is where it's very clear that like Lethe is not actually supposed to, at least under his administration, like meaningfully constrain the societies.
It seems that way. Yes. It seems like they only are able to operate on the good graces of the other societies. And he is not willing to test that at all, whether or not he even cares about testing it.
Right. I would say that he doesn't even care about testing it.
Yeah. He just wants to maintain his position. Yeah. I also wonder, though, Luke, is it starting to feel to you like he's in on this big conspiracy that's happening, that's being unraveled?
Because maybe. Alex, I mean, his response was so inadequate that maybe, yeah.
It's starting to make me wonder if the leak is coming from inside the house. Like if he is a part of this, if this is a conspiracy that incorporates like people in multiple houses and he is included in that. Because, and now maybe it's like you were saying, maybe it's just an artifact of the fact that Alex is new to this and doesn't realize that they don't actually do anything. They're just there as like a rubber stamp sort of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, his inaction almost feels like it's to the point of allowing. Yeah, he like doesn't even give her help when she's like potentially has to go out and maybe face this thing like, hey, here's a book or here's a spell or here's a pocket watch or something. He's just like, don't fuck it up, kid.
Like, yeah, like it's just, it needs to be like restated just because like if a person under your charge is like, let's bring this to a real world, like a little bit more of a real world scenario is okay. Being like stalked by someone, let's say,
yeah,
who like is a real danger, like is a real physical danger to them. Mm-hmm. Like, and you are a professor or whatever, that is to some extent responsible for their safety. Like you do everything. you don't just like, oh damn, that sucks, dude. All right.
That's crazy. So about that turn paper you got working on, how's that coming?
Like you drive them out of state and pay for their hotel room or something.
Right. Yeah. Okay. We're developing a Dan theory as we speak. Here's the theory. Dean Sandow is in on this. He intentionally pulled Alex in because they needed a fall guy. Because okay. what he's saying is he's like, you need to demonstrate that you're not crazy. Everyone, it looks like you're crazy right now. He also gave that video to Turner, which is like, that feels like you're undermining Alex in a very meaningful way. I feel like they're playing Alex to take the fall for this.
Okay.
Because, you know, she's an outsider. She's potentially unstable. I don't think they care that much that she can see grays. I think this might be something that is like, it's the excuse that got her in. But I think they're going to use her outsider status to try and pin this on her. And I think Dean Sandow is part of it.
Okay. And this, we still kind of don't really know what this is, right? Okay.
I will say I feel like some of these societies are either trying to like, okay, so what we've learned so far, let's talk about what we've learned so far quickly with the mystery. So Tara, I think is her name, seemed to have been dealing some of this like magical fruit leaf thing that allows you to like control somebody and dominate their will. And they were getting it from the forestry building on campus that was potentially able to grow it there. And it seems like she is connected with multiple houses on campus.
Right.
And so the question is like, why are they all connected to this two people like growing this stuff?
Yeah.
And so this I'm going to say is like, maybe they're trying to usurp one of the houses. Maybe they're trying to usurp Lethe or Manuscript. Maybe they think Manuscript has too much power, or there's some like power jockeying going on. And I think Sandow is like on the side of the people trying to undermine one of the main houses. Like he has been paid off or something to allow this to go on.
I think I'm on board with this. I think it makes sense from a storytelling perspective as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm here for that.
Which is sad, considering how many times Alex has been used by powerful people in her life. This is like, I'm hoping the narrative is like, she fucking dominates and she gets to be the one who's in charge.
Right.
Because so far it's just been like, Alex has had a rough go of it. Used by like everybody.
Very rough go of it. You know, and like, honestly, a lot of the scenes in here are much darker than I was expecting from this book.
yes.
Including and I don't well, unless you are planning to. I don't have plans to go super in detail about any of it. The one I will say is the one about the lacrosse guy.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of funny that she went with a lacrosse player. But anyway,
you had to.
This just felt like a weird addition to the story. But then the thing that I can't like, I I felt even more weird about was, is it over? Like, is that subplot done? Like, is the him eating poop like, oh, we solved this. Done.
I think to them it seems that way. I don't know.
It doesn't feel like what Alex did is like maybe satisfying again from a storytelling perspective, but it doesn't help this girl.
Potentially not. I mean, I think the idea that she's going for here is that like nobody trusts this guy or wants to hear from this guy anymore. So even if he does try and share this video with people, they're not going to be interested to see it or listen to him.
I guess let me rephrase, because it does help her in a way that like hopefully the video will not spread.
Yeah.
But she's.
Yes.
She was a victim of sexual assault the night before.
Correct. Yes. And I think that Alex's response to this. Now, maybe this is justified because she has lived in a world where authority figures don't really help people.
Yeah.
But it feels like her move here is to go to Detective Turner and be like, hi, I have documented evidence of like a lot of sexual assaults happening.
Right. And also they're all abetted by manuscript.
Yeah. So can we do some crime? Can we do some crime criminal charges on this or what?
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of just like, yeah, ha ha ha, everyone mocks him for eating poop, which is pretty good, to be honest. Like, his life is kind of over now at Yale.
Right.
But in terms of, like, equal, like, in terms of justice, doesn't feel like we're really getting justice in a meaningful way.
Right. Also, just a small thing. The video hits when they're at breakfast, or at a meal, and everyone's like... Yeah. Everyone's like, haha, look at this, and run around watching it and laughing. I will say, if I saw this video, I'd be like, I feel like I would react differently. Not in like, this doesn't mean anything for the story. Just, I'd be like, I don't, please don't show me that.
Of course. Yeah, I'm not looking at it.
This is not enjoyable for me. Like, I guess it's funny because this guy sucks. And it's super gross. And don't show it to me.
Yeah, I agree. And I also feel like I would tell somebody like,
this is clearly fake.
One, it's fake. Two, I would be like, hey, great. I'm glad that video exists. I don't need to see it. You just described it to me. I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah.
I believe you.
I actually kind of don't, but that's not a problem of me seeing the video.
Correct. Correct.
Okay. Okay. The last thing that I really have to talk about is some of the things that Alex starts doing in her investigation.
Yeah.
Where she goes to, I think was it Wolf's Head for the little death ritual? Mm-hmm. And like, I guess it's probably going to, like, we think it's going to work. But we jump into it pretty quick, I think. And Dawes so is like, Dawes like just drowns her.
Like, fully commits. Dawes fully commits, yeah.
Like, I guess you guys are already fairly familiar with magic. But if I'm Dawes, I'm like, we got to double check before I drown you. We got to get an authority. I want to hear it from an elder that this is going to work before I literally drown you to death.
Can we get a few other sources here? Could we try this with a rabbit first?
You need to talk to the bridegroom a little bit. Can we, like, you can see him. Can we do like maybe a little, like, I think he can hear us, as you say. Can we do just like a yes or no question and answer thing?
Can you teach him sign language?
A little sign language action, even. I think the drowning, me drowning you should, let's put that as a last resort.
It does feel like it should be last resort territory. Yeah. Yeah. This is getting at a larger note actually here that I felt like we should be experimenting more with the grays.
Mm.
Cause people are just like, don't look at them. Don't look at them. Don't make eye contact. It's not good. Don't say right. their names.
They really want to avoid making a connection for reasons.
Yes, but now I'm real. I forgot the fact that nobody else can see them,
right.
except Alex, which puts her in a great position to do some science.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
They've got all these questions. Let's get some answers, guys. Especially, imagine how they learned about this drowning thing. This was an attempted murder because nobody drowned, like, nobody is able to physically keep their head underwater and drown themselves in this way.
Right.
The fact, and the carob pod.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of specificity here means that a lot of people died before they figured out.
Yes.
How to do this successfully.
Again, unless they got there from first principles, Dan.
Right. I always forget about that. I always forget.
Yeah. If it was done through trial and error, which I feel like it would have to be, I want to know how long until they, unless they were like, let's try Carapod first, actually.
Oh. They lucked out. Well, yeah, but hold on, Luke. If that happens, all right, hold on. If that happens, Carapod doesn't taste very good.
Right.
You try another stuff?
I'm not volunteering.
Are you like, hey, what about like a Reese's cup? Can we try that? Give me a Reese's cup to see if that'll give me back.
Let's try it. Yeah. I don't know. There was a period in our history here where some also very, very horrific experiments were done. That I mean, a lot of the rituals we've seen, including the stock market one, it's like, how many boys did you disembowel before we got here?
A lot. Gotta be a lot.
Gotta be a lot. Yeah, it's bad stuff.
Yeah. I also wonder with this, so this seems like really valuable of a skill, like of a thing to be able to do.
Yeah.
Like I go and talk to the dead.
Yeah.
It also doesn't sound like they used a lot of like magic to do it. Like it doesn't seem like they're using up a resource to do this.
Right.
I mean,
do it a few more times, you mean?
I mean other people, I feel like if you go and you see somebody else do this,
yeah.
It's like bungee jumping, right? Like maybe the very first time somebody did it, you were like, you're fucking crazy. But then you see him do it like four or five more times and you're like, it does look sick. You the said there's
drowning,
like a
the drowning part seems bad. Yes. But
you said there's like golden eye crocodiles and I can talk to dead people. I am a strong swimmer. I think I would be fine.
This is true. Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like it would be a common occurrence. I feel like this is a frequent thing. Unless carob pods are hard to come by. Granted, I've never seen one, but.
Right. And I don't think that they really had to do much prep. Like maybe it had to be in this specific room for some reason, mm-hmm. but like, I don't think they used up, as you said, much resources for it.
No, no. Also, it just sounds rad.
You,
like
you're
these
doing
like
it?
Cats
you're,
going by.
You're doing
yeah,
it?
I'm doing it. Of course, I'm not going first. But I see somebody else do it.
Yeah.
I'd say, well, I'll tell you what, I'm not going first or second. I think third with peer pressure, no peer pressure, I'd be the fourth one to do it.
Okay. Yeah.
Are you doing it?
I need to come up with what I want to do on the other side a little bit first.
To see to have, to, it has to be worth it.
To weigh the pros and cons. Because like as of right now, I'm like, I don't have a ton that I'm trying to ask the bridegroom about. Because also like the other, the dead person has to be there.
Correct. This is true. So every other person, every other time they've done this, they've had to just guess there was a gray nearby. and been like, I hope they're kneeling down. I hope they're putting their face in the water.
Yeah, I guess we need to figure out what the normal person's experience is like.
Yeah. Well, I imagine...
And what else you can do, because I presumably you can do other stuff.
Seems like it. Seems like it, yeah. Yeah.
But... So, okay, so just to wrap up, she talks to him, and he's like, I will figure out what happened to, or I'll talk to Tara or Tara or whatever. If you investigate my fiance's death a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's like okay, I guess. And is still like very mistrusting of him. At this point, like, call me gullible, maybe, but I'm like, oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
He didn't kill her. This is rad as hell. I'm going to figure it out. Whereas she's like, he says he didn't. Right. And again, maybe her suspicion will be rewarded, but I don't know what the motivation would be.
Especially considering, like, the evidence that he killed his wife is like a ghost tour.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, of course that's the story. Because it's ghosty. It's spooky.
Right. I don't know. I'd be hyped. I'd be like, okay, first of all, you have given me two things. These are two good things for me, actually, because you're going to do something for me, and I get to do a cool, I don't know, investigation and upend a lot of people's assumptions. That's fun for me.
Agreed. I will say, I feel like best kind of person to do an investigation is one that is not hindered by walls. So, like,
true.
Why didn't you do this? Go to the library or the restricted section or whatever. I don't know. You're supposed to be telling me information.
This is a good point. Yeah.
Anyway, maybe we're going to learn about why he couldn't do that. Maybe he can't read.
Yeah, could be.
Could be a problem.
Anyway.
Well, Luke, next week we're going to wrap this up. I'm hoping we get some insight into the mystery. I'm still saying Dean Sandow, bad guy. Dean Sandow is in on it. I think he's trying to use Alex, trying to pin the blame on Alex. I think Alex is going to rise above. What's our over-under? Is Darlington coming back? Yes or no?
I'm going to say yes. I think Darlington's coming back.
I think Darlington's going to be a ghost. Ooh. I think Darlington's going to be a gray that now follows Alex around.
Oh, that could be fun.
And they sort of sidekick that way.
Okay.
I'm kind of curious. I think Helly might be the thing that grabbed Darlington.
Oh.
We didn't talk about Helly, but Helly is that ghost. Helly is the friend of Alex who she allowed the ghost to enter her body to do the murder. And I think Helly's been sticking around.
Okay.
And Helly is the thing that grabbed Darlington.
Okay. Sure. I like
that's
it.
That's my last minute.
That's kind of a shot in the dark, I feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. But I love it.
Could be good.
Okay.
That or Angel. We'll that or a revenging ghost.
Sure.
From the murder. Anyway, Luke, hopefully we find out what happens next time.
Yeah.
We'll bring the hot takes.
And be the dumb nerds.